5:04, hour number two, but Ed? Ed?
Yes, Rich, yes. Earth to Ed.
What do we got now?
We got this. We got a chance for us to rip off other shows with our own unique idea that you know as Covering the Commonwealth.
It was another busy sports weekend here in Central and Southwestern Virginia, and we here at the Sports Line care about our audience. So let's hear from the experts who cover the teams you care about. Here's an unoriginal idea with a local twist, Covering the Commonwealth, a quick-hitting segment with expert insight and analysis on all of the local teams. Let's start with the Hoos.
Yes, sir, the Hoos bowl bound. Our next guest, Jerry Radcliffe, Charlottesville, Daily Progress. Hootie, the Hoos are bowl bound. Did you ever think?
Who would have thunk it?
Who'd have thunk it? Indeed. And a good bowl, too. A great. I mean, this couldn't.
This is a respectable bowl. This isn't Detroit.
It couldn't have worked out any better for him, could it?
Actually, I think you're right. I think, you know, the fact that they're starting to gain a little momentum, and the fact that Annapolis is well over 3 hours away with 40,000 alumni in the D.C., Northern Virginia area. I think it bodes well for them. They should be well represented, which, you know, will be a good thing. They're playing a Navy team that I think they can obviously compete with. I think the Military Bowl said that yesterday was the broke a record for the most one-day ticket sales in the bowl's 10-year history. So,
wow.
Somebody's buying those things up. I don't know who it is, but I would imagine there's a few wives in there.
What does that say for Coach Mendenhall? I mean, especially given the unceremoniously bland and painful loss to Virginia Tech to end the season.
Well, I mean, we all knew they were going somewhere even before that. So I just think that, you know, the job he did this year, getting these guys to six wins, I think he got just about every drop out of this team that he could possibly get. They played well against Miami for three quarters, and, you know, they didn't get embarrassed by Virginia Tech. The game that they competed in, which was a switch from a year ago. I just think the fact that the job he did in getting the seniors to buy into the program, and, you know, guys like Blanding and Kaiser coming back that believe, kind of took a blind leap of faith that he was going to do something. I think it speaks well for him and his staff that they got these guys bowl eligible within a 2-year span. A lot of people didn't think that was possible.
Hootie, I'm not a big believer in winning bowl games being important. However, that may be a little bit different this year. Getting back to a bowl game, certainly big for Virginia, but you mentioned those guys, Blanding and Kaiser, and, you know, even though Bankert's only been around a couple years, I mean, he had a big role in this and had to buy in when he was brought in from East Carolina. But, you know, the other two guys and the seniors and the guys who have been around and invested in this program and believed in it and all that, to go out with a win, it seems like would be much more important for these guys this year than, you know, your regular seniors playing in some, you know, random bowl game. Obviously, the bigger bowl games, you know, it matters. But, I mean, this feels different than just another military bowl, right?
Yes, I think it's important for two reasons, which, you know, a lot of programs it probably wouldn't. As you mentioned, sending out the seniors who, you know, have been through some tough times here. And I guess they, you know, a lot of people wondered if this program would ever win again. And, you know, just to kind of see those guys get something out of all the blood, sweat, and tears they've had over their careers here, I think is important. And also, I think just for UVA's, the image of UVA's program, it sends a message, I think, to recruits that, hey, you can come here and go to a bowl and win again and, you know, Bronco says it's the tip of the iceberg. So, you know, his past results at BYU would indicate that he knows how to win, and, you know, going to better bowls in the future is something he plans on. So, I think it could speak volumes in that respect if they come out of that game with a win over Navy.
Jerry Hudy Ratcliffe with us here on the Sports On. We'll have more as the weeks unfold, a chance to look ahead to that matchup against the Naval Academy. To college basketball, Virginia gets West Virginia on the road up in hostile Morgantown tomorrow night. Is this where the first blemish on the resume comes into play for the Hoos?
Well, I don't know, Ed. The last two times they played them up at Madison Square Garden a couple of years ago, I covered that, and the West Virginia came out and hit them in the mouth, and Virginia wasn't prepared for it. They weren't physical. Tony made some adjustments at halftime, and they ended up coasting to a win. Last year, kind of the same thing for a while, and then Virginia got back into it, and West Virginia pulled away at the end, so I think these guys know what to expect now, and they've been in hostile crowds before. So, I think the key to this game, I think, is going to be to meet and to negate West Virginia's physical aggressiveness from the get-go. If they step back and let West Virginia take it to them, I think they could find themselves in trouble again. But I think Tony will have them prepared for that. And on another note, Nigel Johnson, the transfer from Rutgers, who's been very impressive so far, said he's played West Virginia four times, and he says he knows how to beat the press. He said he didn't have any trouble beating it at Rutgers. So I think he could be the X factor in this game to bring sort of a calming effect from the beginning of the game. So, I think it's going to be a good game. I think either team could win. They're both ranked. Should be a hell of a basketball game.
Good stuff, Hootie. Thank you, man. Appreciate the time.
Okay, guys. See you next week.
All right. Jerry Ratcliffe joining us here, covering the Commonwealth. Chris Coleman, Tech Sideline. Supposed to be next. Also working on Damian Sordelet of the Lynchburg News in Advance. And do we have a Redskins guy today?
Yes, J.P. Finlay.
J.P. Finlay. We have some new people working on the show.
Yes, we do.
You're typing feverishly.
I am. I'm trying to get, I even misspelling words, but whatever. As long as I get
just trying to get contact information along.
Hey, passing it along. Well, I tried sending, usually I just send contacts through my iPhone, but it didn't go through, so I've had to go the old school route of taking the number and then copying it down and then messaging it that way. Ah, okay. Well, we're going to change it up. We're going to go Redskins now.
Now to the Redskins.
J.P. Finlay joins us now. Talk a little Redskins and back-to-back Thursday night games. The first one worked out a whole lot better than the second one, J.P. Gotta admit, I don't know that I nor maybe any other people were expecting what we saw Thursday night. What did you think?
Yeah, I mean, that was the Skins' worst effort of the season. It started okay. You know, if that ball doesn't bounce off Jameson Crowder's hands directly to a Cowboys defender, early in that first quarter, and you got to wonder if the Skins might have been able to, even if they just get a field goal there. They're up 3-0. The Cowboys had no momentum. They weren't able to move the ball at all. It was the beginning of a big unraveling, and now really that their season, their 2017 season, there's no playoff hopes in sight, and all the questions that normally wait till January and February are starting to get asked now.
When you reference the bobbled catch with Jameson Crowder against Dallas, is that more an indication of this team just not having the mental toughness when one play like that early in the game makes such a big difference? Or is it more an indication that the injuries have created a razor-thin margin for error?
Well, no, I mean, it's not a mental tough thing. It was one play that was a problem, but then they had three more turnovers. I mean, you're going to lose just about any game you're in where you turn the ball over four times. And two of them were from more or less Crowder's fault, the interception, and he had a fumble later. And then Kirk Cousins had another interception and another fumble himself. You're not going to win with four turnovers, almost period. And yes, the injuries have made them. I think you saw the injuries really take hold in the second half when the defense couldn't get a stop and their defensive line was just so beat up. But turnovers were the story of that Cowboys game. It wasn't injuries. It wasn't mental toughness.
JP, and looking ahead at the rest of the season, obviously at this point, the playoffs are, I mean, is it fair to say a distant memory? I mean, you know, that's not going to happen for all intents and purposes. It was an elimination game last Thursday night for the Redskins and the Cowboys. What do we look for the rest of this season?
I mean, these guys are still professionals. They still have four games left. They're going to play hard. Jake Gruden, certainly the players and the coaches still want to win games. You don't want to finish the year at 5-11 or 6-10. They're gonna work to get to 8 wins. I mean, in their minds, they could probably still get to 9 wins. I think that's probably less possible for them to win out. I think this week in L.A. is a really tough game. But, man, if they lose to the Broncos at home, if they lose to the Giants that have just fired their coaches, I mean, you got to wonder. As bad as things are right now, they can salvage a decent, an average, a mediocre year if they go 7-9, 8-8. If they lose some games they shouldn't, then a lot more becomes in play in Ashburn as far as major personnel changes, major coaching changes, and none of these guys want that.
I'm sure they don't. As JP Finley joins us here on the Sports Line, where does the motivation, the desire come from at this point? Is it to avoid change? Is it pride? What inside this organization can give Redskins fans a glimmer of hope or optimism for the last month of the year?
I mean, they're still pro football players, man. They're getting paid to go out there. And the thing with football, it's not like, you'll see teams tank in the NBA late in the year and, roll out of the bottom of their roster. Football players, because the contracts aren't guaranteed, these guys are still going to go as hard as they can, whether or not it's to stay on the Redskins roster or to make a roster next season. And just the nature of the sport is so physical. You can't go half speed. I mean, guys are still going to – you see it every year in the NFL, late in the year, that bad teams beat good teams. I mean, it's just an entirely different sport. And the team's not going to quit. Especially 4 games left is still a quarter of your season. They still have a lot of games to go.
JP, thank you, man. Appreciate your time as always.
Okay, take care, guys.
JP Finley of NBC Sports Washington.
You almost said the old name.
I did.
Well, they just changed it like a couple weeks ago, though.
It's okay. Roll with the punches, baby. Roll with the punches. Covering the Commonwealth continues here on the Sports Line.
Now to the Virginia Tech Hokies.
Chris Coleman, TechSideline.com. Hey, Chris, what's up?
Not much. How are you guys doing?
We're good, man. We're good. You happy, excited about the how the bowl game shook out? Camping World Bowl, Oklahoma State. That should be a really good matchup. No.
Yeah, some people have been projecting that matchup for quite a while. Certainly an intriguing matchup, probably one of the more intriguing matchups of bowl season. Pitting a dominant offense against a dominant defense, two top 25 teams that haven't played each other in over 40 years. So, not only from a Virginia Tech perspective, but overall, I think it's one of the more intriguing bowl matchups.
Chris, for this contest, what was your first reaction when you saw Oklahoma State and you saw the Camping World Bowl yet again down in Orlando?
Well, it's a good matchup for from a fan perspective, you know, it's a desirable location to go to Orlando. You know, I think that'll be good for the traveling fans. I think they're a tough matchup for Virginia Tech from the standpoint that they can score a lot of points. I mean, you can play a great defensive game and hold them to 30 points. And, you know, with the way Tech's offense is banged up and everything, I don't know that Tech will be able to score 30. But at the same time, you know, I give the Virginia Tech has a huge special teams advantage. You know, Tech's special teams is eighth in the country in the FEI efficiency ratings, and Oklahoma State is 123rd. So Virginia Tech can certainly have a – if they can use that to get a lot of field position advantage in this game, that could really work to their benefit. You know, if Virginia Tech wins it, they're going to have to use the formula they've used against West Virginia, because you're talking about a similar theme here.
Chris Coleman, TechSideline.com, talking with us here on the sports line. And Chris, how about a quick college hoops question? Want to talk a little Hokies? They sneak one out against Ole Miss. Your thoughts, just generally. I was going for a more specific question, Ed, but I just look for the general one real quick. Thoughts on the Hokies hoops team, Chris?
Well, they didn't play well against Ole Miss. They certainly didn't play well in the first 20 minutes. And, you know, they started playing well early in the second half, got themselves down by 16, though, with, you know, about 18 minutes left. And, you know, things weren't looking good. But I think it says a lot when you can go on the road against a Power 5 team, trailing by 16 points in the second half and come back and win when you're not playing your best basketball. So, you know, I think they grew up a little bit this past week from that perspective. Certainly Iowa's not the best team in the world, and neither is Ole Miss. But, you know, I think from an athletic standpoint, you know, they're taking a step forward in those two games with their level of competition and things like that. So I like where they're at right now. I think they're probably a little bit better team right now than they were at this stage last year. I think they're certainly better defensively when they dig in. So we'll just have to see how it works. You know, the season's a marathon and not a sprint, and there's going to be ups and downs and things like that. But they're in pretty good shape right now.
What's the biggest down that could happen to this team at this juncture?
Getting Kerry Blackshear injured. Their only regular in the lineup who's over 6'6". I mean, to me, that's pretty simple right there. You know, Tech is going to struggle certain nights when Blackshear gets in foul trouble and things like that. Although, to be fair, freshman P.J. Horn came in against Iowa when Blackshear got his second foul 2 minutes into the game and scored a career-high 16 points, including 12 in the first half. So, you know, I think Horn's a good fit for the offense and the system. He's not nearly as big, obviously, as Blackshear. But, you know, I still think overall, in the general scheme of things, losing Blackshear to whatever, be it injury, foul trouble, it could hurt this team quite a bit.
Chris, thank you, man. Appreciate the time. We'll talk more next week.
All right. Sounds good. Thanks, guys.
Covering the Commonwealth continues here on the Sports Line.
Now to the Liberty Flames.
Damian Sordelet, Lynchburg News and Advance. Hey, Damian, what's going on, man?
Not too much today, guys. How are you?
We're good. So it's official.
Yeah, it's official.
No changes in the coaching staff for football.
Yeah, it's official. Had a chance to talk with the athletic director Ian McCall Thursday, and he said that Gil was the man that will lead the program forward. And that was good because Liberty picked up four commitments over the weekend. Two JUCO defensive linemen and a couple an offensive linemen and a three-star running back out of Tennessee. That's the springboard of two more recruiting weekends, which I believe they're going to have 20-some-odd recruits on campus over the next two weekends to try to fill out the roster. And like Gil and like McCall said, they're going to try to get the NCAA maximum of 25 freshmen signed in this class, bringing another five or six mid-year JUCO guys to really beef up the roster going into you know, the first FBS season, but still the second season of the transition to become you know, full-fledged FBS members in 19.
I was chuckling when he mentioned, Ed, that they got the three-star running back out of Tennessee. can't get far enough away from UT at this point, huh?
Yeah, he's from Thompson. His name is Troy Henderson. He's from Thompson Station, Tennessee. Didn't get a chance to look on the map of where that's located, proximity to Knoxville, but Tennessee wasn't one of his FBS offers. surprisingly, because you know they need as much help as they can get down there. but yeah, it was a good haul for Liberty this weekend, especially on the defensive line. Getting two JUCO guys, that gets five defensive linemen, an area they really struggled with last year.
Damian, for the Liberty Flames at this point, there's the early signing period as well, mid-December. What impact, if any, is that having on this Liberty recruiting class and their overall efforts?
It was big. When I had a chance to talk to McCall Saturday during halftime of the triple overtime game against UNC Greensboro, he said that the commitment to seeing that, you know, publicly the university was backing the current coaching staff was big for them, especially the ones who have already verbaled, to keep a lot of those guys and instead of having those guys flip to other FBS programs is big. They're going to try to sign most of these guys in the early signing period. And, you know, when Ian McCall was talking to me, he said this has to be the biggest and best recruiting class Liberty's had so far. You know, you'll probably have better ones coming up as, you know, Liberty gets more entrenched into the FBS and becomes a more of a household name. But right now, this has to be the best recruiting class, you know, period. So landing these three-star guys, landing some JUCO guys who can come in and contribute immediately is imperative for this program. So that way, you're not having the struggles that you see the likes of a Coastal Carolina having this year where they're really struggling, you know, throughout the second year of the transition in the Sun Belt Conference.
So when you say it, you know, Ian McCaw said it has to be, he was implying what Liberty needs to do, not necessarily that it is right now currently the best recruiting class, correct?
That's correct, because you will have better classes moving forward when you have more 3- and 4-star guys who go to Liberty because, you know, the values of the university match up with theirs, and athletically, you know, Liberty at the FBS level can provide them the type of competition that you would get if you go to, you know, a G5 or maybe one of the lower tier Power Fives. But for right now, at this stage where Liberty's at in terms of recruiting classes of the past, this has to be the best one to date. And this has to be the one that fills all the needs and gets Liberty to the point of 85 scholarships for 2018.
On the hardwood, triple overtime loss to UNC Greensboro on Saturday. This is a real missed opportunity for them to pad that tournament resume?
Yeah, I'd say so. When you're up by 11 with 4.5 to go in a game where it seemed like the first one to 40 was going to win, you know, that's a tough pill to swallow. And honestly, the game in regulation for the first 35.5 minutes had the feel, if you guys remember back to when Tony Bennett was implementing the pack line at Virginia, and you would have these games in the 40s and the low 50s that you thought, man, that's ugly to watch from an offensive perspective. That's kind of had the feeling that this one had, because Liberty was playing really well on defense and just the shots weren't falling, but they had to rely on defense. And you kind of had that feel with the both teams shooting low 30% from the field that it was going to be one of those games. And then, you know, the offenses picked it up later, particularly Francis Alonso, who, you know, Lavelle Cabell battling foul trouble really couldn't play as aggressively on defense against him as he could have, and that's why Alonzo went off for 25 of UNCG's final 29 points and was able to get some room on those three-pointers that he banked in and shot off 1 foot to, you know, send the game to overtime and send it to the third overtime. So this is one thing that, you know, they'll learn from. Richie McKay after the game said it was a good experience for them to be in that type of environment early in the year against a team that's going to contend in the SoCon, especially a team that has the size that UNCG has inside.
Damian, thanks, man. Appreciate it.
Thank you, guys.
Damian Sordelet, our buddy over at the Lynchburg News and Advance, covering the Commonwealth. Quick break. Aaron McFarling is set to join us, presented by Jersey Lilies. Up next, stay tuned.